next one is Anthony Kirkpatrick, pilot 75 AMD, ketamine, during tactical complex regional.
And in front of you guys, too, I know this is Jennifer. And she, when the study was reviewed, it was in December, a lot of people were not here at that meeting. And the board had asked for an outside reviewer. And so these are the comments that I got today that Jen gave. First one?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, what was this we talked about for reviewers? One from the VA and didn't, I couldn't get Dr. Lee to have another one?
No.
But he's not here today, so he's the only reviewer. Well, for the record, I was very pleased to get this again.
Everyone else should be.
This is not the thing that goes to town, the general with the...
The bond day.
$30,000, like up on the payment.
I don't even know about this, right?
Okay, well, to get just a little summary for those that weren't here for that four-hour meeting. This is a study that Dr. Kirkpatrick wants to do using IV ketamine and Versed and putting patients with chronic pain, the CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome, under 5 days of general anesthesia, getting a ketamine and Versed drip in the ICU at Tampa General. And there was multiple issues with this. Also, one of the main things is that the patients have to pay $27,000 in the form of certified check, cash, however, to Tampa General prior to starting this. Actually, he did do a lot of work on it. I have to admit, there was a lot of stuff done. There was multiple questions that he needed to answer. Number one, about his pager number on the front page. That pager number that he listed doesn't match the one that's in the consent, is the first thing right off the bat. So that needs to be changed. Whichever one is correct needs to be in the consent form in the protocol. Number two and three, I think he answered okay. Number four, the standard of care. He needed to talk a little bit more about how this procedure differs from the standard of care. It differs greatly. He mainly just talked about a washout period and described a couple different medicines, but I thought that part needed a little extra work. Question number five, the risk profile of ketamine. He said that he added that to this. Essentially, all he stated, though, is that it's well established, but he never went on to actually describe it. And that was one of the things from last time that he needed to work on, I thought. Number six was answered appropriately. Number seven was okay. Bandit, and there was a little email there from Dr. Bandit. suggesting the use of a rotating bed to decrease risk of pneumonia, but they never said whether that was going to be used to help decrease, you know, the risk of them getting pneumonia and bed sores, et cetera. And then if it is going to be used, is it going to be part of the $27,000 fee, or is that going to be an additional cost to the patient? I saw some concerns about the ICU nurses titrating the ketamine before, and had questions if they were going to be given in services prior to the enrollment, but that was never addressed. The application, I agree with the staff's comments on there. My question from before, and it didn't really get answered, I couldn't remember what we said in the meeting, was since the ketamine is going to be used for a non-approved FDA label indication, does it need an IND? He never said, you know, it said no, I think, in the application. So, anyway, I think that needs to be applied for.
There was a reason why he didn't.
When they talk about the agreement that the guarantor needs to sign, that whoever is going to be the patient's health care surrogate, that they will agree to pay all the additional costs. I asked if we could see that agreement to see, you know, what was going to happen if the money goes beyond what the patient or the guarantor can reasonably pay, you know, what was going to happen to that person. I actually tried to call somebody over in finance because there was a number listed in the consent and I wasn't able to get through to anybody. So,
he's also available to call for any questions
if you want. Okay. And then under the informed consent, he put in that I asked before that he put in the number of patients that have been tried over in Germany. At this time now there's been 30. There's some updated information about how much pain relief these patients got. And he said in the consent that some had pain relief, some had partial, and some had no. Being that this costs so much money, I would like to see him put in their percent, which is 30% had pain relief, 33% had partial relief, and the remaining 37% had absolutely no relief. So I would like him to be very straightforward in his consent form about how many patients out of the 30 that have been done have had actual pain relief, since they're going to be putting forth a lot of money to do this. They should know what their odds are of having some type of pain relief.
That information at all.
He put a general. He said some have had it, some have had partial.
Well, it says it. But
it's
awesome.
What do you mean?
To get the percentage?
He didn't even put numbers. He just said 12. Where is that? 30 patients. Page 2 of 16. Some of the patients who received the treatment had relief from pain, some had partial, and others had none. I think you should put more specifically so they know that their chance, I mean,
no, no, no.
I'll just say on page 11 of the consent.
On page 2 is what I'm reading, but did they put it on page 11 and I missed it?
Just 9 of the 30 patients have experienced complete and permanent remission from previous transplant.
Oh, yeah, now he needs to define that too while we're on that paragraph right there.
Was it really permanent?
Well, because in his response, he said, there's 9 of the 30 patients, but in the application, it said, yeah, it was 9, that's right. One had, yeah, partial, 7 more times. Okay, I guess he did put it over there. There's so many different things I'm reviewing, so, sorry. That's fine then. To address, he keeps saying, you know, that it's going to be 5 days in the ICU with 2 days post-op, possibly longer. Out of the 30 previous patients that they did this in Germany, it would be interesting to know what was the average length of stay, just to see if it's truly the average of 7 days or if it's going to be longer than that, because the patients are going to have to incur any additional costs over the $70,000, 35% of that anyway. In the informed consent that it suggests that the PI is going to be assigning a healthcare surrogate for the patient. They just need to state that the patient's going to be able to choose that. That's actually one of the inclusion criteria. But when you read the informed consent, it looks like one will be, it says one will be assigned to you. He could be more specific about the cost. Besides the $27,000, it's not very clear. of all the different things that he listed on page 5 of 16 on the instant informed consent. The majority of the things that they listed, when you read it, it looks like it's going to be part of the $27,000. But when you read all the different applications and everything else and different pages in the informed consent, the majority of that stuff does not look like it's going to be included. It looks like the $27,000 is simply going to cover the nursing care, the room and board, and the actual ketamine and the Versed and the clonidine, but everything else over and beyond, the patient's going to have to pay for. So that needs to be, I think it needs to be very, very specific in the informed consent.
He told me all of the patients that are going to meet with the financial people at TGH prior to them ever even joining the study. And the finance department is supposed to give them a breakdown of what everything is going to cost.
Okay, so that's going to be okay for our part to let the finance department over there deal with that?
Well, I mean, we're not accountants.
No, I know, I agree 100%. Except for the informed.
I think they should give a realistic expectation of the informed. It's not anticipated in insurance.
They don't really know exactly. I mean, they can give them an idea, and the finance department can certainly give them a better idea of what it's going to cost them.
Why can't they give us a good idea to put it in the consent?
I think it needs to be in the consent, because I really think this is going to be a lot more money than that.
I think $27,000 is going to be more than $100,000.
Yeah.
I think that can, ballpark it says, could be $100,000 to $150,000.
I mean, just the CDC costs $110, you know, and... any of the screening forms, so I don't know if on the screening forms if they those were adjusted to screen out the patient's own or on nitrate and the lab changes. He didn't put any of that stuff, so I don't know.
No, no, no. Page 6, because of the ones who got a deep partial remission 7, were entirely pain free for 6 to 7 months. Then the thing came back.
7 months.
Yeah. 7 out of the 21 who had some form of relief to begin with, they were completely pain-free, and all of them the pain came back.
But there is no expectation that insurance will pay for this,
though? No. Some people's insurance, they might cover the booster, which is $400 a pop. Yes, they start having pain, and then they can go in as an outpatient basis, and then for a period of time, they'll get a little bit of ketamine, kind of a booster to relieve some of their pain, and that costs $400 a patient, and some insurances might cover it, but how many doses it covers? Well, it says 14 total, but after the first one, they've got to submit all their cost analysis data, how everything went to the IRB and to Tampa General R&D, and then they'll be allowed to enroll 2 more patients after those, a total of 3 patients, and then it has to go to a DSMB, which they took care of, you know, getting all the members of that from an outside source. Then it goes to a DSMB. If DSMB says everything's okay, then they're allowed to enroll and it's the additional 4 patients. And then it has to go back again, and then they're going to enroll an additional 7 patients that don't have necessarily the long-term chronic problems that the original 7 had. Anyways, I don't know if you guys had a chance to read this. This is from Dr. Lombardi. She's one of the pain doctors over at the VA. I talked to her about this, that she would review the study. And so she got back to me. I was actually on time when she sent this over. So today's my first day to review it. But essentially what her ideas were is that she talked to some other people in other states and such about this and ketamine infusions. And he thought that what he wants to accomplish could be accomplished with a lower dose of ketamine that does not require general anesthesia for 5 days. So,
the patient is responsible if they have a complication. Yeah, that's the bottom line is they think they can get by with that general anesthesia.
Where's the house, the lower the boosters are, the lower dose?
They are lower dose.
And they're not providing complete, effective pain relief.
Right. I don't know if it's...
So what is she saying as far as the dosing
A few medical centers are already using it, but at a much lower dose than for the general anesthesia, which is approximately 10 mics pure per minute without side effects, the same side effects that were seen from the higher doses. The patient, she was explaining to me that the patient can be awake, talking to you. They can still be an inpatient in some cases, but it would be done on like a step-down unit, what we would call ICU, and then with all the additional risks and complications that can occur from 5 days of general anesthesia. So, I mean, I know it's changing the whole protocol, but, you know, maybe if he could do this on a couple patients at a lower dose so they're awake in the unit, or in a post to step down to see if they're getting service.
I think we had a reason as to why, you know, from what I recall, the state review at Tampa General, he had a justification for that.
What was it?
I don't remember.
So the journal study intubated.
I don't think that they've used a lower dose on these patients if they're going to be given a higher dose. I mean, there's studies that say there's lower dose that does work, but it's not 100% pain relief. He's going for the 100% pain relief. I don't know. Should these patients be given the opportunity to say, hey, you can have a lower dose? It might relieve some of your pain symptoms where you can get back on with a normal life, or for a minimum of $27,000 and 5 days in the unit with a greater risk to you, we might be able to give you that 30% of patients that have complete pain relief.
But see, I don't think the IRB really should judge on the scientific, his scientific approach to this. I think our job is to judge whether this is really protecting the subject.
I don't know.
They did nothing, he was not intubated, and I got a bill of $152,000. And there was like no anesthesia, no intubation, no antibiotic. It's like, but just getting the daily x-rays and whatever they do is like $150,000.
Okay, so this patient will think this is out of pocket, $27,000 plus, and that 7 to 150, so another $80,000, they're going to be responsible for 35% of that $80,000.
Better estimate of the total cost. I don't care.
getting ready to say that, no, they didn't.
So the major culture of the study is that they're each just going by that kind of spoken evidence.
How do we know the results of the
journal
study?
I think it's social communication.
Yeah, the information that he put in the consent form is what he added that he got from the German people the last time. This wasn't in here before. He really didn't even have that much information.
Right. Yeah, they had 10 patients before, I think.
But this other person, the outsider, who refers to the same study, gives
it. She knew all about it. The second I mentioned it to her, she knows exactly what I was talking about.
Published somewhere, right?
Dr. Lombardi. It's not published in peer review.
Sure.
I don't know. I think there was an abstract or something. I can't remember. I didn't have with me all the data that I had from before. I just reviewed all the new stuff that he had said. But then again, you know, we only have one outside reviewer that this is, you know, her thing to obtain anesthesia, and she's saying that it said it could be successful. Fewer side effects and complications. It's a lower dose is considered. Obviously, it's different from what Dr. Kirkpatrick and the other physicians believe that.
Who's
Dr. Lombardi? Dr. Lombardi, she was out of pain and anesthesia over at the VA.
At the VA?
Yeah. She came down here from somewhere else. Her husband, Dr. Lombardi.
No, this is a tough
one. You already discussed it. It's like 4 hours.
I'm sure you did. I'm not
going to get
into that. We're already a half hour into it, so
yeah. It's also continuous.
It does, and they said that there haven't been any effects, so that was one more question. So has anybody got, like, addicted to it?
Is that why they have this booster
used for them? That's my question.
What is it? Ketamine and first set of
PCP? Yeah. Ketamine is a PCP to work out.
Oh. It's
ketamine. Right. But this said somewhere that they were no addiction to it.
Right.
They had to... But also, if they had to tell the patients, if your pain is, I saw if they told them that, if they just asked them, but if their patient's pain is a 3 or less, they cannot get the booster. And from one of the papers that I read, it didn't sound like a lot of people were very happy with that. They expected 0 out of 10 pain relief. But well, that's something that, it kind of is going to be effective though, you know, or if I have a little bit of pain, let me go back in and get my booster. Just like any other
one.
Yeah.
Do we in fact know that it is more expensive to go to Germany?
Probably cheaper.
If they can afford this, they can probably afford to go to Germany.
Yeah, the girl in the video actually stated how much she spent. I know that she said her father had to put his house, had to get a second mortgage on his home to be able to do it.
Once a year. Somebody in the room.
had complications. We do it bone marrow transplant. You'll see going to go to rehab afterwards, so they're really
helpful. I know that the health system efficiency is almost more than what the radiology department. Because at the end of the day, we have an x-ray of the same thing. And all these x-ray tests that have been oddly suspicious, we have 50% of these guys have had pneumonia. I really don't know what the answer is. But I just don't know that right now that the benefit outweighs the risk.
And that's what the IRB is all about.
So even if he answered all of the questions that you raised, you're still going to feel the same way?
Well, I think that would be informing
this patient more with some of the information that you still want.
I think he needs to be extremely specific about how much it's going to cost, about all the data on those other 30, patients as much as possible, and that's probably over and above what we asked for other studies, but given the situation of this study, that it should be provided to the patient, and answer those questions, get another outside reviewer's opinion, and then given all that stuff, and say, okay, do it on one.
That's all they're allowed to do as well.
I mean, it'll have to come back to IRB for approval for any more, is that right?
Is there any national level for anesthesiology that you could get in the CMS system? really. There's an expert in pain control. So your recommendation is to do all this and pretty much deferring it.
I think that's kind of best. And the majority of the stuff that I had is stuff that could easily be corrected. You just need to get a little bit more information, and then the main thing is going to get these outside reviewers.
I think you also need to address this with somebody else. She got as an outside reviewer, thinks she can do it with us.
If he addresses all the things that we've brought up, still with,
what if we get the two outside reviews and say, yes, this is a good idea, I would do it for a limited number of patients, wouldn't you be more inclined to go with it?
Well, I think it would probably be good to get two more reviews so that we can provide more justification when we deny the study. So you can't do this here.
Why do you assume it wouldn't get funded as an exposure again?
No, in the sense, if he is up for it, then he should have substantial rationale to go in.
That's why we're asking for two experts. The motion is to defer the two
do that again.